I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It's a show about a man who's lost 3 million years in space. His company had evolved out of the hologram he hates. Plus a fuzzy robot and a ship that's gone senile. We love the jokes and sci-fi stuff, that's why. It's better than
Welcome to Better Than Life. My name's Fergus.
And I'm John. And this is the first of a couple of very special bonus episodes to keep you entertained before Series 4 kicks off.
That's right. We're busy gathering talent, creating impeccable recordings for your podcast-loving ears. But in the meantime, we have a couple of treats for you. And starting off this episode, we'd like to play you a few cuts.
Yeah.
Bits that didn't make it into the final episode.
Choice cuts.
We often record with our guests for an hour and a half, 2 hours, if we're lucky, 2.5 hours sometimes. They're very keen on talking about Red Dwarf, as are we. So yes, we can run long, especially if it's a late night record. But we like to edit the show down to an hour, keep it brisk. Don't take the mickey with your time, listener. So things have to be cut.
But now we can put it back in. Not back in, but we can put it back into your ears.
That's right. Because we believe, even though they landed on the cutting room floor, they have no less value and are worth hearing. Interesting little tidbits.
We chose to exclude them out of respect to you.
That's right.
And now we are sharing them with you out of respect to you. So without any further ado, let's get to the clips. We're going to start with some crackers from the wonderful Vix Layton in our episode all about backwards. Enjoy.
Anywhere you look in the show, there's awesome things to talk about. There are the massive sci-fi ideas. At least one per episode, usually two, let's be honest. There's amazing jokes, iconic chat, banter moments all the way through it. But politically as well, it's like you can talk about so much stuff. It's a show full of blokes, but it still warrants a chat about gender.
There's not so much toxic masculinity in it either. I think they treat women, every character treats women as like beyond them. Like they are aspirational characters. They are not good enough to talk to them. They do not deserve to be in the same room as them. I think there's, they do treat women as sort of a more superior as a rule.
That's one thing that would presumably have to change if you did do an all-female reboot of Red Dwarf, because that wouldn't work the other way around.
It's like the absolute idol worship of like Christine Kachansky, who was like a cool woman who was quite senior in her job. She's very attractive, but you know, the women characters were really cool. They were not objectified to the same level.
Badass, yeah. As well. Yeah. And looking forward to that. Do you remember the Jane Horrocks when she pops up?
Yeah.
She's amazing. Describing Rimmer's lovemaking like a Chinese meal.
Yeah. It's
tiny portions, but so many courses.
such a good episode. Now I want to go and watch them all.
I'll do that.
Going back to our episode, so many people pop up that are absolute sort of comedy legends. Like Morwenna Banks was in one of the episodes I watched.
Yes, she was the elevator hostess.
And obviously, character. Arthur Smith, we'll get to.
Did you guys know that the Big Crunch has a real world origin?
Ooh. No, tell me more, John.
It's actual Stephen Hawking, this. So Doug Naylor, I think he was at the doctor or something, and he was trying to read Stephen Hawking's Brief History of Time, which I guess is probably the most bought and least read book in history. and he gets to this bit about the Big Crunch. So the whole idea, as explained, I'm sure Holly simplifies it, but, you know, time starts running backwards to the Big Bang. It's not just a soft sci-fi concept. It sounds like one. But it's actually a Stephen Hawking theory, which blew my mind when I found out that...
It's more about what happens when the universe runs out of entropic energy. It'll start retracting again. And the idea is that, because all the planets are moving away from the Big Bang still, at some point that will stop moving and then start... And the idea is that when the universe starts shrinking again, that means time will run backwards.
Yeah, there's like a 20-page footnote describing a woman eating an eclair backwards, and they literally just lifted the whole thing and put it in the script.
Ah, Stephen Hawking was all over that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like one of those...
He said it's funnier with tea.
Yes, exactly, yes, it is. It's got to be tea, yeah, because then you've got to think about what order they put the milk in, yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm going to try that when I'm making tea after this.
Oh, don't visit a dairy farm on backwards earth.
It's like that kind of step process. I got asked that in an interview once. It was a stupid interview for a stupid hipster company. No, I didn't get the job. And they asked me to describe all the steps in making cheese on toast. That was number one. And then number two was draw a sheep carrying out those steps.
What?
Yeah, I'd forgotten, like... I'd missed out on like toasting the bread before I put the cheese on. He was really smug about it. He was like, oh, what do you think about this? I was like, maybe I don't like it that way. But, you know, under pressure, really basic things. I was in an interview. I had to get this right. And I managed to miss like a total step of it. So it's hard.
At the same time.
I know. Yes, I had a horrible maths question. It was for a creative job that I literally tapped out of. They were like, we'll give you more time. I was like, you can give me all the time in the world. I'm not solving this. I'm just going to go. Like, literally, I'm done. I'm not even trying to solve it anymore. I'm out. I'm going.
Yeah.
Good for you.
That is the way.
The things they make you do at interviews.
Yeah.
So it's actually quite hard to remember simple steps that you do every day when you have to do them in a slightly different way, is the point I'm trying to make.
You know how we don't understand people who are talking backwards?
Yeah.
How do people understand what Rimmer's saying during the act?
Oh, they don't. They're just mind blown by it.
So wouldn't, as a performer, wouldn't you be insecure about that kind of applause, that kind of feedback? You'd be like, you don't get it. I appreciate the applause and the laughter, but you don't really get what I'm doing.
I think if you listen to the backwards words that are actually backwards words, you sort of get a sense of what they're saying in a way that you don't when it's garbled.
Okay.
So in the same way, when you see sort of letters jumbled up and your brain can match them, I wouldn't be surprised if you could sort of, like a foreign language almost, get enough of it. Because when people are sort of speaking backwards, your brain does try and decipher the sounds. So I wonder if they do get enough of it.
Oh, yeah, okay, nice.
You pick up a sense of it, yeah. I think being a sensational reverse brother is like the one thing Rimmer's done in his life that he doesn't feel insecure about, actually. I think he's just soaking it up.
Yeah, and like, what's there to lose? That's the thing. There's absolutely nothing to lose, nor to gain. There's a real freedom in just having in low stakes.
What you said, Vix, about the fact that he's like, you know, he's always been the crap kid and, you know, that everyone hates. Like, the fact that he's getting younger, actually, it hadn't occurred to me, but there's a real poignancy to that. He's obviously thinking, right, I'm in the prime of my life, everybody thinks I'm amazing, and I'm going to get to go back and redo my childhood and all of those dreadful memories, all those times I was tortured by my brothers. You know, I'm going to bring all this swagger and all this confidence. I'm going to live my childhood properly, but in reverse. And at the end of it, I'm just going to be a baby.
Because when he was drunk, he was saying to Lister, you know, he was envious of, like, the attitude that Lister had, the life that he'd led, that he'd made those choices. Like, he's always had that about him. It's, like, the jealousy, like, but, oh, he's not jealous, but it's under the surface all the time. He's not the star. He's not the person that is sent forward for the missions in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, do you know, oh, my gosh, you've only just, sorry... He doesn't even get to be the last human.
No.
Lister is alive and Emma's dead. He doesn't even get to be part of that group either.
He's
the second last year.
It's just a real sadness to him that I think it resonates to me more now as an adult in terms of sort of your life not quite necessarily matching up to what you expected it to be when you were a kid, and, you know, making the right choices and it not working out. Is there's a real, yeah, there's a real sadness to that character. So it is nice seeing him happy.
Yeah.
You can see why he doesn't want to get back on the ship to be sort of disrespected again and made fun of.
Yeah.
The next batch of clips comes from episode 3 with Kirsty Newton and Nick Doody, going into a little more depth on Danny John-Jules, Red Dwarf's cool factor as a young adult, alongside other comedies which came out in the 90s, and whether or not it's still appropriate for kids.
I remember watching Maid Marian's... do you remember Maid Marian?
Yes,
Maid Marian.
Yeah.
And not realising that Barrington was the cat.
Oh, yeah.
And just going, no way.
Yeah, he's underrated.
That they're the same person. Full he's like...
immersion.
So yeah. Completely different characters.
So, yeah, so method he was willing to file his teeth down to human legs for that role.
He is incredible at somehow playing many notes with just one note. It's extraordinary.
Yeah,
really,
yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah,
and then you can justify that move in character because, you know, he's been hanging out with Lister and Rimmer and he's learnt human stuff. And that's the official reason, right?
Yeah, and also he's not around any other cats, so he's going to become, you know, it's a bit like our dog, because she didn't hang out with other dogs for the first kind of 6 months of her life, because it was, well, even longer probably. She thinks she's human, because she just had me and Nick. So she kind of, the first time a dog came to our house, she was like, what is it?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's amazing.
I can take a guess at this based on what you guys have said, but was it the sci-fi or the comedy that drew you in more, or was it both, the mix of both?
Probably the sci-fi to start off with. There were a few sort of comedy sci-fi shows. There was one I was trying to look up earlier. I can't remember what it was called. It was something like Run Rig, but not Run Rig, because that's a band. They're really sort of downbeat, just this bloke who wears a raincoat and just keeps getting abducted by a flying saucer and can't explain it to anyone.
It sounds like Todmorden that we... we live in a very sci-fi area, very alien-y. But
really?
And I would watch it just because I knew there were going to be aliens in it at some point. But it also shows, like, you know, The Greatest American Hero. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Rings a bell. No, when was that?
That would have been maybe even a little before Red Dwarf. But that's again, a spaceship lands. This is an American show and gives this guy a superhero costume that gives him powers, but it's given it to the wrong guy and he doesn't have the instructions. Goes through all sorts of ridiculous adventures. But that's, again, completely up my street.
That's really interesting. Is were those shows American?
The first one I mentioned was British. Oh. The one I can't remember the name for. It's really hard to Google something if you don't know what it's called.
Yeah, that's true.
You're like my granny trying to find out the name of an actor. Oh, you man who was in the thing!
You remember, but he had the hat in One of the themes that's come up is how little social value Red Dwarf has had, which is nice that you're describing as more of a social thing. My understanding was that comedy was a bit of a geeky thing to be when I was a teenager, and sci-fi was also a geeky thing to be into. So Red Dwarf was a doubling down of that geekery. That to take to university and expose to your peers is quite a brave thing to do. So it's nice that you found your Red Dwarf niche.
For sure. The biggie when I was at university was the day-to-day. That's with me and my friends. Who'd been really into the radio show On the Hour. They've got, oh my God, the guys who've made On the Hour have got their own TV show. It's going to be amazing. And, you know, it was amazing. But we had to fight other people to get to watch it.
It's so disappointing when people don't. I remember showing people Alan Partridge and someone I respected, a friend, going, oh, I don't like this. It's like, it makes your world crumble.
It's more they didn't know what it was. I mean, at one point I remember having it on in every room. Was the senior room, I think, at that point. It was my fourth year. Because I did languages, so my third year I went and lived in Paris and I came back and, you know, knew far fewer people, but had a different common room. We had it on, and I remember there was a bit, Prince Charles has volunteered to put himself in prison, and somebody watching it just completely convinced they were watching the news. Just going, oh, that stupid man.
Brilliant. That's when it's won. That's when they've got it right.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to think Red Dwarf was the news, though.
No, not so much.
That's interesting hearing, though, that also there was... I see Red Dwarf as this kind of crystalline thing that only happened once. And I know that there have been other sci-fi comedy shows. I just didn't realise they were concurrent with
Red
Dwarf.
Well, because it had so many series... Right, that it would have been syndicated in the US, right?
They never made a remake in America. They tried a couple of times, but it tanked.
No, I just meant the equivalent of like it was running. That's,
oh, I see.
That's a lot of series to have of one thing. Most,
yeah, that is true.
Even quite successful shows don't make it into the double digits of series.
Yeah,
that's very true. They've been, well, they keep saying it's the last one, and it makes sense because, you know, they're getting on. They need to wrap the story up, but Doug Naylor just keeps not quite getting there with it,
right?
And wrapping up, leaving it open-ended.
Funnily enough, when we found out we were going to do the podcast, we were actually looking after our neighbor's 10 or 11. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I was watching it at 11 years old, so I'm pretty. And she was like, I haven't watched it for ages. I was like, to be honest we haven't either. We can't really remember if it's okay or not. And I'm quite glad it's probably one of the only ones that it might be. I'm sure it'd be fine, though. I can't see anything in that wouldn't be okay for him. But
well, you might find yourself having to explain the word clitoris, but apart from that.
I mean, I think every 11-year-old knows what a clitoris is now. If they don't, they should.
My mum really liked head scratches. She really used to like that, having a head scratch. You know. And I once got her for Christmas something that was like a head scratcher, like kind of, but it was called an orgasmatron.
Yes,
I remember that. Yeah.
It's also a sci-fi reference. But I thought, oh, she'd love it, and she was so amused by this, the fact that like her son had got her something called an orgasmatron. That was by far the best thing about the present for her. I'm not sure if she ever used it.
It basically was a head scratcher, just rebadged, wasn't it? Essentially, an orgasmatron, from what I can remember of them.
It was, and people kind of get a tingle from it, yeah, I suppose.
I couldn't stand them. It made me just go, get off me.
Ugh. Oh, no, you would hate
it. I hated it. You had one when we got together. Oh, there was one in hanging around Cranley Gardens.
Hang it like, I just picture it suspended from the ceiling. Is that what you mean? Or just
so you can just insert yourself into it as you walk
on
past
the thing, and you just put it on your head. And it, some people really like it, but it just kind of does that on your, scalp.
But also, Kirsty hates spiders.
I don't think
we would be allowed to have something this shape suspended from the ceiling.
No.
Yeah.
Nope. That's pretty much a robot spider from years in the future.
Yes.
And continuing that theme of what happens to fandom when you get older is this set of cuts from Tom Price, who is our guest for Body Swap Episode 4. We did hear from some listeners who were concerned that Tom, they felt, came across as negative about the show. I think these clips will pretty definitively prove that he absolutely flipping loves it.
The sit is always really funny. The situation and what it makes them do. And this whole thing about sitcom is you take a character and you chase them up a tree. They're all chased up a tree very, very quickly. And the things they say up the tree aren't necessarily hilarious all the time, but the fact they're up the tree is delicious every time because you love them.
The jokes that don't land, they're more forgivable anyway, right? Because of what you're saying, the writing is so tight that actually if you get a joke that doesn't quite land, it's there because, well, it's better than them not telling a joke, right? If someone's going to say a thing, it needs to, William Goldman style, it either needs to propel the story forward or be funny to misquote Goldman.
I'm trying to think of an example, but there are plenty of moments where often Lister, often actually the sort of beginning of the episode jokes, you know, there's always a little sequence, isn't there, at the beginning. How does this one start? Can you remember? What's the dialogue at the beginning of this episode?
This one starts as quite action-packed body swap. The ship's going to blow up.
It's a really odd start, this one, because it starts with Rimmer going, we've got a problem. They're fixing stuff.
Yeah, it's so sci-fi.
It's actually very serious.
Turn, really struck by
Turn, he's looking at some 3D monitor. Why Crichton can't do it. It's fine. It's nice that Rimmer wants to make himself useful. We'll get to that in a sec.
But again, mum and dad were fixing stuff, and the kids were walking around going...
breaking stuff.
What's the matter with the VHS? Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it often opens with a bantery scene.
Yeah, banter is the word. A lot of things where you go, oh yeah, you know.
Takes a surprisingly long time usually to get to the main plot. In fact, I mean, even this episode, it's all setting up for the actual plot of the story, but we'll come to that.
That does make it rare, though, yeah.
I suppose the thing about having so many gags is that even the ones that don't land
now, it keeps the kind of it keeps the smile on your face because you're enjoying the characters. You know it. You know it's funny on paper, even if it hasn't kind of quite connected with you. And you're just surfing the laugh all the way through, right?
Yeah. But this episode wasn't done in a. This was the first episode recorded without a live studio audience. But of course, we know why, because of the syncing.
Copious amounts of ADR, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
It would have been a nonsense live, surely.
Can you imagine? They've obviously recorded it first and then they sync it up afterwards.
Yeah.
I was sort of watching it going, I wonder if they... No, that would be insane to do that.
Yeah, that would be mad to pipe in the audio.
That's not going to end well.
God, that would have been crazy. How long did you stick with the series, Tom? Did you kind of tune out at a certain point or have you actually followed it all the way?
When did the first iteration end then? 98,
I think.
I remember very clearly having the book, I think Better Than... What was the...
Yeah, there's Better Than
Better
Life.
Better Than Life was the book.
And Backwards and The Last Human.
I think I had Better Than Life. And I got it from the library and I was going to read it on holiday. This is when I was about 14 and I remember... fetishizing it in the sense like I'm obsessed with books, not necessarily because I'm clever, and definitely not because I'm clever, in fact, not because I necessarily read them, but I just love books and I love the physical sensation of them. And I had this book and I looked at it endlessly and I really made myself wait, and I read it on holiday and I devoured it and I loved it so much. And of course I don't remember any of it, so I really, this was the, and I had a t-shirt as well. I had a t-shirt with Smeghead written on it. My god, I just remembered that. God, I've probably got, do you know what, I might have a little look and see if I can find one, because I've probably got them around. Oh, but amazing. I watched the TV show, I read the books, I had the t-shirts. No other TV show that came close to having that much, you know, nothing.
Did you have a British Empire t-shirt?
No, sadly not. More's the pity.
Birds of a Feather hoodie.
Oh my god, I also did warm up for Birds of a Feather. That was interesting.
Did you? Yeah.
The reunion. No, yeah.
They did a similar thing with that. Yeah. You know. It was absolutely huge. And then, as is the way with these things, and this is, there's something in this as well. It's sort of the Morrissey quote, isn't it? Don't forget the songs that made you laugh and the songs that saved your life. You know, you sort of, you just move on. You just sort of forget about it and go, oh, Red Dwarf, you used to love that. And you're like, no, you didn't just love that. You were obsessed with that. You called everyone a smeghead for the best part of a decade. And now you're pretending that you're into theatre. Like, you really, you're in your 20s, you really betray your teenage self. And I feel bad about that. And
that is what happened. I think everyone just kept the fact that everyone liked Red Dwarf a secret. If we hadn't, we could have been talking about it.
I know. I didn't realise you guys were massive fans. And I spent 3 years day in, day out with you guys recently and seeing it on iPlayer. And I've got the DVDs, but again, never watched them. And I did the warm-up and I've met them all. But I guess I just always shrug. You know, isn't that awful? And so the pleasure of doing this has been fabulous. And I really hope I will... Maybe this is the next stage of our lives, guys, as we move into the Rimmer years, the three of us. I will start to... look back and enjoy these things more and become that old man who watches old TV.
Yeah.
But certainly seeing this all on iPlayer, I've had a lot of pleasure from watching these three or four episodes and realising how many quotes I know.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy. It's crazy how many of...
Just, smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast. Just like all these things that I just sort of have sat in my brain, and I've always assumed I don't really remember quotes from stuff. And then I watch it and go, I say that all the time. That's from Red Bloody Dwarf.
Yeah. Tom and John, can I ask you both a question, actually, then? As you're people who made, you had a bit of a gap in your watching of Red Dwarf, I've watched it on the regs since it was out, and I find everything that I loved as a teenager so forgivable now. Do you know what I mean? When jokes don't land. I think I might have been angry about a bad joke in Red Dwarf when I was like 11, 12, 13, 14.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, because it was like, oh, come on, guys. You're wasting my time. But now everything's just... I don't know. It's more exciting and edgy than a comfortable blanket, but it has that about it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, oh, it's fine. If you think there's bad performance in it, somehow I don't see it as bad performance now. I see it as that's what the character was up to at that time.
I think my critical faculties have always been really bad. And I think I've always just watched it and gone, it is the world. And I am very easily persuaded of the integrity of these worlds. I don't have the ability to go, oh, that's a choice. I go, that happened. Do you know what I mean? I've always been very much like, absolutely, the writer's chosen to do this. That's not how I think at all. I also think, oh, this is the thing that happened.
I think if you're a sci-fi fan, you have to be an apologist to a certain extent. Like, you have to work out how to defend it.
Do you know the great Doctor Who story about Peter Davison going to a convention, and one of the fans at the convention started asking Peter about an episode and a thing that had happened to the Doctor? And it became apparent to Peter, because he was thinking, I don't know what this guy's talking about. I don't remember this bloody episode. And it became apparent that the question was about a previous iteration of the Doctor.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's lovely.
And the fan was like, well, you're the Doctor.
Oh, so
that's lovely.
It happened to you. Oh. And I love that. I absolutely love that story because it's pure, absolute belief. Yeah. So when something isn't funny, I'm like, well, that happens in my life. Sometimes things aren't funny. and God knows that's true when I'm, you know, doing stand-up or doing a podcast late at night. You know, it's fine. So it's I've always been quite forgiving of it. Certainly accepting of it.
I think I feel the same that yeah, I'm just loving rediscovering a thing that, like you, Tom, was so much more formative than I realised it was at the time, coming back to it now. And all these, you know, just moments and images and line reads that just take me right back to being that teenager watching it over and over again on a taped VHS off the telly. And but what I'm finding is that I can now see, you know, watching episode three times for this, your critical faculties are there because you're trying to find things to say about it, right?
Yeah, sure.
But none of it really bothers me that much. No. And every time we've recorded this and I've gone, oh, guys, what do you think about the joke like this? You know, and it's usually something like, oh, I don't think you'd have a joke like that these days, would you? And the guest is inevitably just utterly nonplussed by that and it goes nowhere and Alex cuts it, quite rightly. And I think that's because I don't really care. I don't really buy it. It's just a lovely world to spend time in, and they're great characters to hang out with.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like it.
No.
I think you really hit on something with what you said earlier about the sort of the sci-fi scaffolding marrying with those characters. I really think that's why it endures, is because it doesn't date. Like, the effects date some of the references where they shoehorn in a kind of contemporary 80s or 90s type reference for no real justifiable reason other than comedy. You know, that stuff dates, but the fundamentally, if you just go with it and let yourself be in the world, it hasn't really aged.
Also, it harks back to a time when and this was the same when I was doing this podcast about LOLO recently. It's theatre. You're watching people who trained in rep. You're watching a different generation come to fruition, and maybe those guys are a bit too young to have done that, but Rob and Doug certainly would have been of that world. This is a different approach to making stuff, and their training and their experience is all theatrical, and it's plays, and it's commitment. Like, here's the thing. Here's a fag packet theory. Shows from 2000 onwards, The Office and Partridge, were not about committing. They were about retreating, going, oh, God, oh dear, this is... Oh. The shows before that, like Blackadder or Red Dwarf, were about jamming your head into the molehill and finding out what was going on.
Yeah.
The aesthetic completely changed as well, right? We're not talking about studio, like open front proscenium studio sets anymore, right?
Yeah. Exactly. It was a front-footed thing doing comedy then. You threw yourself into it, but also the characters threw themselves into it. Things happened to them and they would try and alter them. Whereas it feels like, and this might be absolute bollocks, post about 2000, certainly with The Office, it's much more stuff's happening to me and the comedy is in. I blame Tim from The Office. The comedy is in watching someone going, oh, that's a bit, oh, that's, well, what's going on there? That is what comedy became. The awkwardness. There's no comedy of awkwardness here.
No, there really isn't.
The sad music nowadays to start off a sitcom. You've got to sit through 30 seconds of really sad, mournful music.
Yeah.
Gone are the days of the sing-along end credit sequence.
Oh my God.
Goes, yay!
But that's another thing as well. And that's, I'm sure you've talked about this before on the podcast, but the this was rock and roll. This was a rock and roll comedy. You know, that this starts with a guy in leather and it's the best theme tune of any sitcom ever. I'm sorry, the Rembrandts, but it's true. It is, like, I cannot tell you, throughout winter, every morning, the first thing I do is open the back door and let the dogs out. And every time it's below about 4 degrees, I will go, it's cold outside, there's no... And I will be humming that tune every day in winter, right? Mm. It is an absolute banger, and it's rock and roll. And it's a tribe in a way that was so perfect for a teenager growing up in a boring middle-class town in South Wales.
Our last clip for this episode has nothing to do with Red Dwarf at all, but it does end a story that regular listeners may have been following. It's Vix Layton chatting about the end of Quantum Leap, much to John's chagrin.
Ah.
Listener, if you want to avoid spoilers for the late 80s body-swapping sci-fi saga, skip ahead a minute or two.
One of the saddest things that I got reminded of actually on Twitter again, because like I said, I'm permanently online, is Quantum Leap, the last one where it's like Sam never made it home hit me right in the feels. It's like,
so as extreme listeners of this podcast will know, John, I think he's just had the end of Quantum Leap spoiled for him.
I have. I mean, it's my own fault for not watching it when it was on Netflix. I mean, so
you've had a long time.
I know. I can't really complain, can I?
Yeah. No, and my, I think you kind of know that was always going to happen. You know, too much had happened to him. He would never have been able to return back to the life he had. He knew too much and he changed much. So.
Honestly, Vix.
And also, it's pretty much a 50-50 thing.
when you said it the first time, I sort of exclaimed loudly so that I wouldn't hear you. But that time I heard it and I'm devastated.
Oh, no, well, I see.
That's fine. I'm sure it's on Blu-ray and I'm sure eventually they'll come up with some sort of memory wiping drugs and I can enjoy it. It's not your fault.
You can't ask me about geekery and then tell me I'm not allowed to talk about geeky things.
It's very true.
It's the apex. It is the apex, Quantum Leap. All right, so what's your favourite Quantum Leap episode?
The one where he's Marilyn Monroe. That's incredible. Okay. I love the gender bending of it. It's like really progressive for its time, if you ask me.
It was bloody great, that. Yeah. Yes. All right, we'll do it next week. We'll do Quantum Leap.
All right, good. Yeah. Whole new podcast, me and you, John. You watch it for the first time. Me experiencing it with new eyes.
Yes. What we should do, we could do it like one of those podcasts where there's an unravelling mystery. So the reason I've never seen the end of it is that I watched all of it. The final episode, we went out, it was being taped, and a thief broke into the house and stole the VHS. That's why I've never seen the end of Quantum Leap. So we could do an episode breakdown show, but with an unravelling mystery where by the end of Quantum Leap, we have to find the thief and
I love it.
Get them on for reconciliation.
It's a fan rewatch combined with Serial.
Combined with a mystery. I think, honestly, I think that's probably better than this concept, isn't it?
No, this is the best podcast ever.
You guys go and do your little podcast about Quantum Leap and crime. I'm going to sit here and chat to Alex then about Red Dwarf.
All right. Oh, Vix, it's all right. I forgive you. I think 30 years has passed the statute of limitations, isn't it?
Surely.
We have got a listener, actually, who's absolutely cringing to this day about something that happened to him 30-odd years ago. Can I share this email from Steve?
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
Listeners, this comes into betterthanlifepod@gmail.com if you want to share your own tales of Red Dwarf, your responses to an episode, anything you like, go ahead, type it out, click send, and we'll love to receive it. So Steve says, loving the pod, having just listened to the episode Polymorph, which features the iconic line in question, you'll see what he means in a second, I thought I ought to write in. I can't put an exact date on this, but it was around 1991. My brother and I, young teenagers at the time, had been fans of Red Dwarf for a good while, but only catching episodes as and when, not really regularly or even in the correct order. We saw Red Dwarf t-shirts in C&A whilst shopping with our mum. Although she had no idea about the programme, we convinced her to buy us one each. My brother going for the Infinity Welcomes Careful Drivers sign, similar to the paperback book cover, while I opted for the one with a picture of Lister and Bazookoid with the slogan, "Let's get out there and do it."
What?
I wore that t-shirt everywhere, happy to be telegraphing my love for the dwarf to the world. Of course, I'd not seen the episode Polymorph at the time, but sometime later, I happened to see it, and when I heard the line was actually, "Let's get out there and twat it," I was immediately hit with a sense of discomfort. Why was the t-shirt censored? It doesn't really make any sense if the quote's wrong. I stopped wearing the t-shirt as much. It didn't seem quite right. When I started sixth form, I saw someone wearing an uncensored version of the t-shirt. I felt a kind of retrospective cringe so hard, it still leaves me cold today. Why did I have to be the kid with the uncool C&A version when, I guess, places like HMV had been selling the proper one all along? I thought I'd been broadcasting my cool fandom when I'd actually been wearing a shirt that said, "I don't really understand this, and my mum buys my clothes from C&A. It still makes my toes curl."
Oh, Steve.
Started buying my own t-shirts after that. The swearier the better. Good job, Steve.
I can imagine. Oh, Steve, that's rough.
I feel for you. But thank you for sharing that, Steve. It's do you know what? It's nice when our fandom shames us, I think. It keeps us human.
Yeah, he's kind of annulled his own fandom by wearing the ring. Oof.
Yeah, if he annulled it then, he's affirmed it now by taking the time to write a lovely long email into a specialist podcast all about Red Dwarf. So his fan status is reinstated, I say.
Yeah, actually, do you know what, Steve? If that's any consolation, there's quite a few listeners cringing along with you right now in sympathy. It's an empathy cringe right there. I have a little listener email. Can I read it out? It's only a short one. We asked for incidences of the fourth wall being broken and characters looking straight down the barrel into the lens. And Sam has emailed us. As you asked, there is at least one other look down the camera, he says, in the episode Better Than Life, when Kat ruins Rimmer's fantasy saying, "It's mine."
Oh, yeah.
That is, yeah, he looks straight down the barrel at that point.
He tells us.
Rimmer's looking at his cigar and Kat in disbelief, and Kat is very much addressing us, the audience.
Yeah, good spot, Sam.
Can you get away with it more in Best Than Life because it's a fantasy land? Maybe Kat feels like his fantasy is to be on camera and live the life where he can have a fourth wall to break.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? He is kind of always on display, isn't he? Yeah.
I love it. Thank you, Sam, for bringing it to our attention. I think that's it for this time, listener. We will be back shortly with another episode before Series 4 drops properly, with more deleted scenes. Mm. This time from Jono.
Dulce Sloan.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Bye for now.
Would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.